Thank you for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. The top agriculture stories from this past week are on the way, along with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin's Indiana Farm Forecast. Here's some of what's coming up on today's show.
I'm CJ Miller. You'll hear from an Indiana farmer who is in the Oval Office this week. And I'll tell you about a huge grant awarded to the Indiana FFA Foundation.
I'm Greg Allen. Indiana agriculture is looking toward a future where farms aren't just feeding people. They're actively improving human health. That story's coming your way.
I'm Andy Eubank, and after some gains earlier in the week in the soybean market, profit-taking came in on Friday, significant profit-taking. I'll have all the details later this segment here on Hoosier Ag This Week.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. You'll also hear about a new regenerative agriculture plan from USDA, and it's time to invest in yourself. I'll tell you how full-time farmers can get a scholarship from the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs for the state's premier ag leadership program. Let's begin in Washington, D.C., where we can tell you that financial help for farmers is on the way.
This country and our farm economy is facing a crisis that we inherited that most of these farmers have not seen in their lifetime. Profitability is down. It's just one crisis after another.
That's Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins on Monday as she sat with her boss, President Trump, while he announced that money collected from tariffs will be used to help farmers farm for another year.
So we're going to use that money to provide $12 billion in economic assistance to American farmers.
Of that $12 billion, $11 billion will go to row crop farmers and what they're calling the FBA. Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. The other $1 billion is being held back for commodities not covered, like specialty crops.
This relief will provide much-needed certainty to farmers as they get this year's harvest to market and look ahead to next year's crops, and it'll help them continue their efforts to lower food prices.
Details are still forthcoming, like how much money will go to each commodity sector. But Rollins says those details will come quickly, as that money needs to get to farmers.
The money will move by February 28th of 2026, but by the end of this month, so just in the next couple of weeks, every farmer that is able to apply for it will know exactly what that number looks like. So as you are going to your lender, as you are working to ensure and understanding what you can plant for next year, you will have that number in hand.
To submit questions, justification for USDA Farmer Bridge Aid, or to request a meeting on Farmer Bridge Aid, producers can reach out to farmerbridge@usda.gov. Now, one Indiana farmer was in the room when President Trump made his announcement. C.J. Miller has that story.
It was an honor to represent all the different types of farmers from Indiana.
And that's Tyler Everett, a corn and soybean producer from Lebanon, Indiana. He tells Hoosier Ag today that he received a personal invitation last week from Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins after hosting her on his farm during her visit to Indiana back in late October.
I remember when I looked at my phone very early morning on Wednesday and saw that text message from Brooke Rollins, and I woke my wife up. I said, "Brittany, I just got a text message from the Secretary of Agriculture asking me to be at the White House on Monday with the president." I didn't know what to do. I just about jumped out of bed, and I was very excited and humbled and honored.
Everett says the Trump administration's $12 billion farm aid package will provide a huge boost to America's farmers.
I know there are a lot of different farmers struggling much worse than others, and I know that this will mean a lot to every one of them farmers, and I hope it's used responsibly and appropriately for next year's inputs and farming expenses and living expenses.
And after having met with President Trump on Monday, what message does Everett have for other farmers around the country?
President Trump wants what's best for us. He doesn't like assistance packages more than anyone else. We want free and open access to market and trade, and he agrees 100% with that. But he was more than happy to help with this assistance program, and he has our back 110%.
You can check out my full conversation with Boone County farmer Tyler Everett. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
And I'm Eric Pfeiffer. You're listening to Hoosier Ag This Week. That Indiana Farm Forecast is on the way in just moments. We'll also have more farm news. But right now, let's talk markets. Soybean futures fell back below $11 this week, and the exclamation point was more losses on Friday. With that and more, here's Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. The soybean market did lead the markets lower, although everything did finish in a sell-off on Friday. We'll have those final numbers coming up. First, in the middle of the session, I checked in for some commentary with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading. Markets lower throughout much of the trading session, just a little down, Brian, in the grains, but the soybean futures market led lower, so we saw probably some profit-taking and some long liquidation going into the weekend, and it was a pretty significant sell-off. Any particular reason why?
Thanks for having me, Andy. I think we're seeing some long liquidation, as you said a moment ago, in beans. We've seen a delayed release of commitment to traders reports, and those show that as of mid to late November, the speculative sector as such had a significant long position in beans. And with the improvement, improvement in the weather that we've seen in Brazil the last 2 to 3 weeks, dramatic improvement in rainfall totals across previously dry areas, and the combination of the improvement in the weather in Brazil and the liquidation has just been too much for the bean market to hold up. And we've seen quite a sell-off, as you said.
We did see some gains in the bean market earlier in the week. And we also have seen, really, it seems, a resumption of daily flash sales of soybeans, not only to China, but elsewhere as well.
We have. And I think that there are some growing indications that perhaps the 12 million ton eventually objective of selling beans to China will be reached. It may not be reached by the end of the year. It may be pushed back a few months, but it does look like eventually we'll get pretty close to that number. And it's needed because the soybean export sales reports that we're seeing, catch-up reports, again from the USDA, are showing that we don't have enough demand to meet the USDA forecast without those Chinese sales. So yes, we're actually seeing some sales also of corn. And we're seeing some very strong indications that the USDA's decision earlier this week to bump up their export forecast was justified, because we're seeing some really stellar weekly export sales numbers from the USDA on catch-up. And so, yeah, I think that the corn market is a little bit more on solid ground export-wise than beans right now.
But the corn market has really gone nowhere throughout the course of the week, oftentimes right near even. What's happening in corn?
I think we're starting to see some holiday trade as such evening up.
Grain market commentary from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading, an economist there. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. More numbers now. The final numbers from Friday trade. March corn ended down 5 3/4, going to 440 3/4. May 449, a loss of a nickel and a quarter. July 4.5 lower, 455. Again, the weak side leader, beans. January down 16 3/4, 1076 3/4. March contract ends at 1086 3/4, losing 16 cents, 15 1/4 lower for the May at 1097. And March wheat, 529 1/4, down 4 1/4. Meat markets mixed. February live cattle, 229.55, down $1.40. February lean hogs, 84.52, up 35. I'm Andy Eubank with the Friday Market Review. More hat news and the Indiana Farm Forecast next on Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
I remember one of my first visits to a farm when I was new to agriculture. I learned the term farmer engineering. I just say that because, you know, from top to bottom, farmers are innovators. And the Accelerate 2050 report really calls for us to put farmers back at the center of the innovation ecosystem. One of the things I think we can think about moving forward, and our team is really working around, is the unique opportunity we have here to be a test bed for some of the food is health innovation that's coming. You know, our farm assets here, our farmers and our logistics, our ability to move crops and food really lends itself to testing and proving this food is health economy.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Your Indiana Farm Forecast on Hoosier Ag This Week is presented by Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance. The best word to describe the forecast, Arctic. Here's Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin.
Boy, I tell you what, it's going to be a wild ride the next week or two. Mother Nature has all sorts of fun stuff slated for us. It starts with our fourth clipper system of the week working through the Hoosier State later today. We're starting with an increase in cloud cover over Indiana, but no significant moisture. But by midday, snow showers are starting to push into central Indiana. I think we end up with potential for snowflakes the entire state, but anywhere from State Road 14 all the way down to US 50, I think we can pick up anywhere from a coating to 3 inches or so. You get a dusting up north near the Michigan line as well, maybe a little bit of moisture down into southwest Indiana. But yes, this is clipper number 4 that is definitely headed our way, and we're going to deal with it through the day today. Now, by the time we get to midnight tonight, I think it's gone, and behind it, Arctic high pressure tightens its grip on the region. It's cold today as this clipper comes through, but it's colder tomorrow underneath this Arctic high pressure dome. Tell you what, way below normal temperatures. We'll see wind chills that are going to ramp up quite a bit, and this cold stays into early next week as well. Monday, I think, starts chilly, but ends up not quite as cold as tomorrow. So definitely bundle up here for the weekend, potentially the coldest air of the season so far. Now, Tuesday, we start to see winds go southwest, and that's going to raise a very interesting spectacle for the rest of the week. Very warm air in here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I think initially the snowpack that we have in parts of the state will probably keep a lid on temperatures on the initial warm-up Tuesday. But by Wednesday, it won't matter. Lots of snow melt, and so we get a lot of bare ground, can soak up solar radiation. Thursday, we're going to add insult to injury as we bring some rain through, anywhere from a quarter to 1 inch of rain across all of the Hoosier State. So muddy mess by Thursday. And then, interestingly enough, behind that front, we take temperatures down real quick. Friday looks to be quite chilly here. And then we see about as quick as the cold air moves in, warm air comes back. So we're very chilly on Friday. And then temperatures bounce back by Saturday afternoon, the 20th, into Sunday, the 21st. We are mild. And then the entire week of Christmas, we are going to be putting together a mild run. Precipitation-wise, well, I don't see a whole heck of a lot through the warm-up. Again, we've got that front as we move through next Thursday, but the week of Christmas, I don't think we have anything significant here except right around Christmas Eve itself, we may see a little bit of rain come in, and then after Christmas, Boxing Day, that's when we see a large area of low pressure trying to lift through the entire eastern part of the United States. I'm meteorologist Ryan Martin.
The end of the year reinforces the value of collaboration. From neighbors lending a hand to partners sharing know-how, teamwork is essential and is how Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance operates on its mission of enabling viable farms, healthy soil, and clean water. Indiana's ag and commodity groups, alongside state government and conservation leaders, work together to vet practices that improve the environment while protecting farmers' bottom line. Helping Indiana farmers thrive is a win for all. Show your support for Indiana FFA by attending the Blue and Gold Gala. It's Saturday, February 28th at the Barn at Bay Horse Inn in Greenwood. The evening begins with a cocktail reception and silent auction at 5, dinner at 6, and a live auction to cap off the night. All proceeds benefit Indiana FFA. Join us as we support ag education and career development for Indiana's next generation of ag leaders. For more information and to reserve your seats, visit INFFA.org. You are listening to the Hoosier Ag This Week Weekend Show. I'm Greg Allen for this second half of the show. We've got plenty more stories to pour through, including this one that came out of the latest Quadrant event from Agrinovis, where Indiana agriculture is looking toward a future where farms aren't just feeding people, they're actively improving human health. And leaders across the state say two big ideas are shaping that future. Food is health. It's a simple phrase with a powerful mission: using what we grow to prevent disease, reduce healthcare costs, and strengthen communities. Indiana researchers and producers are teaming up to develop crops with enhanced nutrition, improved digestibility, and even natural compounds that may support better long-term health. According to Christy Wright, president and CEO of Agrinovis Indiana.
Given the assets we have here, from our farmers to our startup community to the scale-ups, all the way up to the kind of big corporate anchors, as well as our university landscape, we have all the ingredients to bring those things together to try to catalyze collaboration, to try to help new initiatives come to life, to bring more members into our ecosystem to help make sure it's thriving.
But the other horizon is just as exciting. Bioinnovation. Indiana continues to build momentum as a national hub for ag bioscience. Think seed genetics that help plants withstand extreme weather. Precision fermentation to create new proteins. Biostimulants that reduce fertilizer use. Even advancements that turn agricultural waste into new materials, fuels, and carbon-smart products.
We already have great assets here in the bioinnovation space. And interestingly, they need the same kind of scientific infrastructure, manufacturing infrastructure. So, you know, when we think about those two things, we see a lot of synergy between those and a lot of opportunity for Indiana to grow in that space.
So what's next for Indiana agriculture? A future where food strengthens public health, innovation boosts productivity, and Hoosier farmers lead the way in one of the fastest-growing sectors of the global economy. Well, turning from Indiana to our nation's capital, corn growers are busy on the farm, but many are also working in Washington for their fellow farmers. Andy Eubank has more.
The nation's corn growers continue to lobby in Washington for a year-round solution to E15 or unleaded 88 availability at gas stations across the country. The first vice president of National Corn Growers Association, Matt Frostick, says that is their number one legislative issue.
The political appetite's right in D.C. to try and get that pushed through. We just need a pathway to get it done. And that's a struggle given what the atmosphere in D.C. of getting anything done. So we're really we're looking at any strategy that can get it attached to any bill here moving forward through December. There's some promise there. Staff is working hard to negotiate that and work through some of those roadblocks. We do have certain key senators that we have to get through to get that on the floor for a vote.
Frostick says NCGA is also working to bring down the very high cost of inputs farmers rely upon.
And I had a committee right now that we formed back in the summer to kind of look and deal with some of these issues. And our staff has put together some great data that kind of charts it from 2007 to now. And we can kind of see some of the hiccups in those graphs of what happened. And so we spent some time going to different conferences within the industry to see more intimately what's going on, say in fertilizer, so that we can understand how we can help to bring those prices down.
He said they do have some ideas on how to help, but
there's no home runs out there. We're going to hit some singles and, hopefully get some runners across, but dropping the tariffs is going to help. But there's also other things that we can probably do within domestically that will, help mitigate some of those inputs. And it's not just fertilizer, it's seed, it's equipment, it's everything.
NCGA's numbers are $160 to $170 negative margins per acre for corn growers this year. Not feasible for very long, he says. Frostick Farms in the Thumb of Michigan, roughly 80 miles north of Detroit.
Thanks, Andy. Nearly 2 weeks ago, African swine fever was confirmed in Spain for the first time since 1994. CJ Miller reports how this is now impacting the pork market around the world.
So Spain is a top global exporter of pork, and they are also the largest producer of pork within the EU.
And that's Aaron Borer, Vice President of Economic Analysis with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. The virus has been found in wild boars near Barcelona, which is in the Catalonia region of northeastern Spain. That region accounts for about 8% of Spain's total hog production. One thing that Borer says will help Spain is that the country has set up a regionalization agreement with several countries, including China, South Korea, the United Kingdom, and the EU, which means that Spain will still be able to continue its pork exports for those hogs produced outside of the affected region.
I think Spain is really a success story and something that the U.S. industry should aspire to, because they were very quickly regionalized EU regionalization, Spanish authorities and EU authorities agreeing on that regionalization literally within days.
However, Japan, Malaysia, and Mexico are among the countries that have shut off all pork exports from Spain. In the meantime, though, Borer adds that those closed-off markets may provide some incremental export opportunities for U.S. pork.
So their second largest destination after China is Japan. And Japan is a full suspension. There should be some opportunities for U.S. pork into Japan, thinking mostly frozen loins. For Malaysia, I am optimistic. Again, the potential for kind of a mix of cuts and just given the limited facilities eligible globally to supply that market, there should be some incremental business for the U.S.
Read the full story at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
Find all of these stories and more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Greg Allen. Don't go too far. We have more of the Hoosier Ag This Week weekend show coming your way. It's a known fact that some seed companies appreciate your business so much that they have you sign a contract to lock in your orders for years. In other words, you're stuck with them. Seed Genetics Direct doesn't waste paper on contracts. To show their appreciation, Seed Genetics Direct does things like sell seed at a fair price, shake your hand and say thank you. Do business once with Seed Genetics Direct and you'll want to buy from them over and over again. Value, knowledge, performance, and no contracts. It's in their genetics. Seed Genetics Direct.
After years of dedication, Jim and Jody Johnson are retiring and selling their quality farm equipment through Purple Wave's December 30th Ag Auction. Don't miss their 2024 John Deere ExactEmerge 1775 NT Planter and 2019 John Deere S760 Combine. See the equipment yourself during open inspections at Osage, Iowa on Wednesday, December 17th and Monday, December 29th, both from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit purplewave.com for a complete listing. Purple Wave Auction, straight, simple, sold.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm C.J. Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. And this past week, USDA launched a $700 million regenerative pilot program to help America's farmers adopt practices that improve soil health, enhance water quality, and boost long-term productivity, all while strengthening America's food and fuel supply.
Through this program, USDA acknowledges that farmers have long practiced regenerative agriculture on their farms, both through federal conservation programs and on their own. We are certainly still digging into the details of this new initiative, and we are looking forward to making sure that it is administered in a way that is workable.
And that's Brian Glenn, Director of Government Affairs for American Farm Bureau Federation. He says that USDA's new initiative will apply to two programs that many farmers already participate in,
including the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, EQIP, and the Conservation Stewardship Program, or CSP. And it dedicates $400 million to EQIP and $300 million to CSP to fund regenerative agriculture projects that improve soil health, embrace water quality, and boost long-term productivity for farmers.
If you're a farmer interested in the program, you can apply through your local NRCS service center. You can also read more at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, the Premier Ag Leadership Program in Indiana is accepting applications for their next class. As Eric Pfeiffer reports, a scholarship for full-time farmers is now available through the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff programs.
Thanks, CJ. Applications are being accepted now through January 19th for the Agricultural Leadership Program administered by Agri Institute. The program is for anyone in the ag industry or those who represent rural communities. And if you're thinking, well, I'm a farmer, what could I get out of the program?
Probably the exposure and networking that you're not going to find out in the middle of your 80-acre cornfield on a daily basis.
Doug Mathis farms in St. Joseph County. He's one of two farmers who received a $1,000 scholarship from the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance to help pay for the $6,000 program. Mathis says being part of the program has led him to consider pursuing future leadership capacities in the industry, like board leadership for the checkoff programs.
You reflect on how you learn to farm from your grandpa and your dad, and you're that next generation, and you realize you, if good leaders aren't stepping up or people that are genuinely interested in trying to do things the right way, however that may be, if they're not willing to put themselves into the leadership roles, who will? And then what does that look like for the next generation?
Andrew Winger, also part of the current ALP class and a farmer from Benton County, says the program has challenged some of his thinking about the industry. Prior to applying, he questioned what the return on his investment would be. But now?
I definitely think that there is a return. Can I tell you how much it is? No. Will I ever be able to tell you how much it is? Probably not. But I'm comfortable today knowing that it was a good investment in myself and my farming operation.
And that $1,000 scholarship for full-time farmers is available again through the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff programs. For more information about the program, reach out to one of the many graduates or visit agriinstitute.org. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And a huge grant has just been awarded this week to the Indiana FFA Foundation.
The Lilly Endowment has granted the Indiana FFA Foundation $750,000 for capital projects.
And that's Lisa Shadon, Executive Director for the Indiana FFA Foundation. She tells Hoosier Ag Today the grant will help fund expansion projects at the Indiana FFA Leadership Center, which is near Trafalgar in southern Johnson County.
That facility we've had for over 50 years. It has some great need for improvements and just how we want to expand our campus. And Indiana FFA was fortunate enough to get phase one at $150,000. And then now we're looking at phase two at $750,000, which we'll be receiving sometime this month.
She says the plans are already drawn up to upgrade the main lodge and its facilities.
You know, we host many of our conferences out of that main lodge facility. That is where all those students come in when they're pouring in for our different camps and conferences. That building has been in existence for a little over 40 years on that particular piece of the property. So we know that it has definitely stood the test of time, and now it's time to reinvest some dollars into that and get it more ADA accessible, making sure that we can serve students of all sorts and kinds there at that Leadership Center.
Lisa adds that the investment in the Indiana FFA Leadership Center is also an investment in the next generation of Indiana's ag leaders.
We are developing those future leaders that are going to lead our country someday. And we think that that investment is extremely important. And I would encourage anyone out there that sees our youth and see the good that they bring to our country, that they would want to make that investment. And you can always go to our website at inffa.org, and there's a donate now at the bottom of the screen.
You can also find that link and read more at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, it's time to turn out the lights on another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download the podcast version at HoosierAgToday.com. And on behalf of our award-winning news team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Greg Allen, and Hoosier Ag Today chief meteorologist Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.